This is, as I said, the second in a series of talking about kingdom living, what we can learn from particular passages in the Bible about how to live Monday through Friday. And as we said in the past couple of weeks, the first thing that most people want when they're asked about their faith, they want something that's sincere and authentic, something that's real. And the second thing they want is a relationship to Jesus. If you were able to boil those two things down, then you would have something that would satisfy a lot of people's spiritual desires. And so what we're trying to do is to express in a very complicated and a complex world how to get there. How to get there. How to get to Jesus in an ordinary workaday 9-to-5 world. And it may seem strange to say that we want to look at Nason in Acts chapter 21, verse 16, as an example of this. And the reason that would be strange is because that's all you ever hear about Nason, ever. That's all we ever hear about him in the Bible. That's all we ever know about him from history. That's it. That one verse that you heard me read a few moments ago, that's it. And it would be very strange, I think, to try and figure out how in the world do we learn something about someone who's mentioned so infrequently. Yet I would propose to you that even from this we can learn something. I would propose that it is the greatest of honors for a human being to be mentioned by name, even if it is only one line, in the greatest book that's ever been written. And in many ways, Nason's history, Nason's life, to get him to that point, to get him to that mention, is better than hundreds of pages elsewhere, or hours on the radio, or a lot of exposure in a particular blog on the internet. In other words, it is the greatest of honors to be a mere shadow on the Bible pages than to be someplace else and to receive worldly honors. And the reason for that is Nason must have been mentioned for some particular reason. He must have been important in some way, even though he's obscure to us. He must have been a person who did something with his life that was dedicated to Jesus. Now, we're told that when we encounter him in Acts 21, that he's living in Jerusalem, and you'll hear this, the narrator says, we went and we stayed with Nason. The reason it's we is the author here is Luke, the person who wrote the third gospel. He is a traveling companion with Paul and some other people. So Paul and Luke needed a place to stay when they went to Jerusalem, and they stayed with Nason. This Nason was a Cypriot, the island of Cyprus. We know that that's secular soil. That's not Jewish soil. We know that that's foreign land to the people in Jerusalem. So he was born someplace else. He was born someplace far away from Jerusalem. And he was born in secular soil. He was born someplace where he would have been outnumbered by people who did not believe the same way that he did. On the flip side, though, since he was born in Cyprus, he probably could speak Greek. He probably could speak the language of the day. He was very fluent with it, most likely. And in today's terms, we would say that he was probably somebody who had influence then, since he could speak the language of Cyprus. He was somebody who was able to influence people. Yet the most interesting thing about Nason is he's called an early disciple. And that's the most interesting piece of the whole thing. He's an early disciple. In some of the translations, it says that he's an older disciple, which isn't exactly correct. It doesn't really mean old as in chronological age. It means that he's been a disciple for a long time. Most likely, he's been a disciple of Jesus since Jesus walked the earth 30 years earlier. It probably means that he knew Jesus personally. So what does that tell us? That tells us, And when you were in Sunday school, you did not learn the name Nason in your 12 disciples. You had to memorize, some of you in Sunday school, the 12 disciples. You didn't learn the name Nason. What does that tell us? It tells us that Nason was somebody who was maybe on the outer rim of the disciples when Jesus was around. But 30 years later, he's still there. 30 years later, he's still planted there. 30 years later, he's still doing ministry. People like Nason are few and far between 30 years after Jesus' death because of persecution, because of rough life, because of very difficult living conditions. When you take Judas out of the equation, the one who betrayed Jesus, all of the other disciples except for one meet an early death. The only one who lived into old age was John, the youngest of Jesus' disciples. So Nathan is somebody who has made it in terms of longevity. He's somebody who's stuck in there through very difficult times, who has not gotten discouraged. It's interesting, I was talking with a few people earlier over in the steel building. It's interesting how God works, because I was going to tell you this story about a conversation we were having that I had earlier in the week, but then it sort of was re-echoed here just this morning. I had a conversation with an elderly man this week, and we were just making small talk, as you do out in places, and we were talking, and he said, "You know, I don't know about the news. Can't stand watching the news. It's always murders." And I said, yeah, that's tough to read the news. I agree with you. He says, "I can't stand to read about the weather anymore either." He says, "It's too cold, it's too rainy, there's tornadoes, there's always bad news about the weather." And I said, "Yeah, I agree with you. It's tough to read about the weather too." He says, "Politics. Don't get me started on politics." I said, "I'm not going to get you started on politics." And I said, it must be pretty difficult for you. And he says, "No, this is great." He said, "You should have seen it before. You should have seen the Depression. Now that was bad." He said, "You should have seen World War II. Now that was bad. You should have seen politics in the 60s with Watergate. Now that was bad." And it was remarkable to me that this person had such a perspective of the past. He said, "Today's pretty good." And we were talking about that this morning. It's a lot better now to have electric light and indoor plumbing than it was a long time ago when we didn't. Of course, I don't remember that, but some of us did this morning when we were talking. The point being, we've been in bad places before. We just tend to forget it. Nathan has been through bad things before, but we tend to forget it. So Nathan was like this elderly gentleman. He's seen bad stuff. He's seen the crucifixion of Jesus. He expected Jesus to come back at the end of history and to redeem the whole world. He expected everybody to want to be baptized. He expected this Prince of Peace. They called Jesus Prince of Peace, right? You follow me here? Prince of Peace. And what has happened since Jesus has died? All of his disciples have been persecuted, and it hasn't been very peaceful at all. As a matter of fact, it's been very violent. There's been all sorts of troubles if you're a disciple of Jesus. And at one time, Nathan was young and energetic and ready, and now, 30 years later, his body has changed. Every day, I'm willing to bet, Nathan had reached the age where something in his body ached. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? I haven't quite reached that age yet. But every day, something in your body doesn't work the way you think it should, or it should have 20 years ago. Nathan's reached that point. Many of his friends from 30 years ago are no longer around. And he had to combat the loneliness. And I know there's someone out here who feels like that. I know there's somebody out here who has seen many of your friends pass away, and you are one of the few left living. Or feeling like a dinosaur. Nathan has that to deal with too. Nathan is not a spring chicken, and he is hosting the next generation of disciples, the next generation of people coming up. And you realize, gee, I'm not it anymore. I'm not the future any longer. I remember Jennifer and I, a couple years ago, we went to New York City for a concert. It was a wonderful time. And we got on the subway, and there was this young woman who whipped out her cell phone and began to text with speeds that would have made Superman amazed. I can't even get my fingers on my cell phone to text properly. And this woman was able to do it without even thinking about it. And the subway is shaking and everything. And she just sent this huge, long message texting. And I thought, I am really getting old. I am really a dinosaur. What better witness is there to hope than somebody like Nathan, who's seen it all, and he still abides and still believes? What better witness is someone who's seen all the seasons of life, every one of them, and is in his last season of life, and still abides and is still faithful? You know, when you're in the spring of life, when you're a young person, there's enthusiasm and energy. You get baptized and there's newness, and you want to teach the kids, and you want to be involved in Sunday school, and everybody's got energy, and the kids do, and so do you. That's a great moment in life. But then in the summer of life, there's some maturity, and you learn how to pace yourself. And you learn maybe that you don't panic when things go wrong. You've got enough experience to say, oh, I've seen this before. I can handle this when things don't go your way. And you're more able to take the long view. If you reach the autumn of life, sometimes things go a little bit slower than you would like. But you get to enjoy what you've planted. The faith of your children, your grandchildren, the work that you've done in the church has shown some fruit. And then in the winter of life, when things start to near the end of life, there are still the habits. There are still the practices of what you've done throughout your life. If you've lived a good life and if you've continued in those habits, then those things will carry you through. I remember a visit when I was in the church in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, with a woman who was a Girl Scout leader. She was a Girl Scout leader, had been very involved, and she was a Sunday school teacher for many years in our church. And she had had a form of dementia, and she was in the retirement home, and dementia just ravaged her mind. And she was not able to remember who I was, but wearing the collar sort of helped her to realize that I was from the church. But she couldn't remember things about yesterday or the day before, it just did terrible things to her. And it was tough to see this woman who was in charge of all these Girl Scouts sort of lose her faculties over time. But every time I went to visit with her, every single time, we would pray the Lord's Prayer. And you know what? Even when she didn't know her own name, she knew that. There was something there. There was something there that stuck, that went into her DNA, that deeply provided comfort for her. And our visits got to be shorter and shorter because she got to be more and more agitated, but we never gave up on the Lord's Prayer together. Now, the winter of life doesn't just have to mean a failing of faculties like dementia. I knew a woman who was homebound for different reasons and had been for a long time, and she was still able to minister in the church. You know what she did? She would get the newsletter in the mail, and she would, before she even opened it up, she told me, she would lay her hands on it and pray over it, because that was her church. She couldn't get in, but that was her church, and she would pray over the people who were mentioned in that newsletter. Even before she opened it, she would put her hands on it and pray over it. What a great ministry to know that you're being prayed for by somebody. Which leads me back to Nason. Nason was obscure. He's not well known. Obscurity. He's evidently not that famous. If he had something that Luke could say, hey, this is the guy that did this, he would have mentioned it. He just mentions him by name and passes on. Do you ever feel like that? You're mentioned by name and then just passed on. Do you ever feel like you're the small salmon swimming upstream? You're the only one who is involved here. It's little old me against the world. Jennifer says when I say that, that's my pity party time, right? Little old me against the world. Do you ever feel like it's just too tough? Like it's not worth it. You're not appreciated. That your boss isn't very good. That your clients are too demanding. I know if you work retail, you know something. And I know this. That the customer is always right is just a saying. It's not true. You ever feel like that some days? You just want to close the door and keep everybody else out. Nason did too, but he never stopped ministering. There's a role for you in Jesus' plan. No matter where you are, no matter how beat up you feel by life or by your job or by your family, Nason says, don't stop. There's a job and a ministry that's just for you. And if you want something better for your children, for your own life, for your grandchildren's life, take the long view. It took Nason 30 years before he got mentioned in the Bible. 30 years before he got one little sentence in the Bible. We all want something better for our lives. We all want to be more connected to Jesus. Nason was patient enough to wait 30 years. Nason says, work and grow where you are planted. Because even if the rest of the world takes no notice of you, even if the rest of the world pays absolutely no attention to you, Jesus has written you down in his book. Jesus has written your name in capital letters and he's underlined it because he has a plan for you that is different from my plan and is different from everybody else's plan in here. Jesus wants you to minister for him. And our names are written down in his handwriting
in his book. Amen.